This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright and Brock Rahm.
You know when your mind starts reading something while you're talking, and my mind just went to like, I'm going to say what I'm reading.
Andrew Abrams found his way into the industry through networking. Every step of the way was because of a connection. He's currently with the Vegas Golden Knights, and we dive into what it takes to bring creativity and technology together to deliver a Vegas-worthy show on the ice.
All right. JP, are you at time.is?
I will be in 1 second.
Okay. I am recording. Yes, I am recording.
Oh, let me record on here. All right. Don't want to lose this one.
All right, let's clap at 58, JP.
Broadcasting 101.
It's as far off as we've ever been. It wasn't even close.
The clap sync.
We really don't need it, but it's just a running joke in the open now, so We have to do it.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Happy to be joined today by Andrew Abrams of the Vegas Golden Knights. Andrew is a senior executive producer, production and venue technology. Andrew, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Andrew, we're going to start with you, just like we start with a lot of our guests. Why don't you give us a little bit of your background and what led you to the Vegas Golden Knights and where you're at right now in your career?
So do you want the short story, or are we going to, we want the long story?
It's a podcast. We got time for the long story. Okay. Come on.
All right. Because the story of how I started and how I got to here is a pretty crazy one. Met a lot of cool people along the way. And I think this really just shows that people in our industry are really there to help each other or help new people, become something of themselves in this industry. So start from the beginning. I'm from Western New York, about an hour outside Buffalo. That's where I grew up. Growing up playing with my parents' video camera, sort of realizing, you can make videos and you can do these cool jump cuts and a lot of in-camera editing. Growing up like that. And then in high school, realized that there was a vocational institute right down the road from us that offered a radio, TV, audio production course. So my junior year, I enrolled in that. And that's really where I started to learn nonlinear editing. Premiere was just coming out. So really, that was the first kind of aha moment that I realized that you can have a career making videos, which is awesome. From there, went to a 2-year community college in Auburn, New York, just outside Syracuse, called Cayuga Community College, majored in telecommunications. One of my internships there was actually with a Time Warner Cable Sports, which is now Spectrum Sports. And that unit did a lot of Syracuse high school sports, and they also did Syracuse lacrosse and football. So that's got to work on a TV truck, got to learn all there is to learn about the live production aspect of sports. Transferred to Fredonia State, which is kind of outside Buffalo, for my 4-year degree in TV film. And then, like a lot of people, graduated and tried to, what was the plan? So the plan was I applied like crazy to anything video related, news, production companies, sporting, TV, NBC, all the major sports networks, all the major news networks, just applied. And it took about a year and a half before I got my first job. But during that application process on Teamwork Online, which we all know, there was a group kind of outing at the Cleveland Cavaliers arena. So it was sort of a job fair, and then included in that job fair was a ticket to the game. So I'd never actually been to an NBA game before. So I was like, oh, that sounds cool. So I lived about 3 hours from Cleveland. So drove to Cleveland, got a hotel room, and then went to this event. And I was going around the concourse and kind of disappointed, realized it was just a lot of internships and sales positions. And at this point, I already graduated from college and I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to work in video, not necessarily for sports at this point, but just in video. So kind of disappointed. The day was coming to an end, and I was about to leave. And I thought to myself, you know, I've never seen an NBA arena before. So I kind of saw the closest VOM. I sort of snuck my way into there, and I'm just in this VOM, kind of in awe, looking at this arena. And all of a sudden, this guy comes through, and he has a tour of elementary school kids. And I'm just kind of out of the way, just looking around, and I hear him, sort of overhear him talking, and he says, you know, blah, 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 from upstate New York. And so my ears perk, because, you know, when somebody says the same state you're from, you're kind of like, oh, I wonder where they're from. And he kept talking to these kids and blah, 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 video production. And my ears perked up again, and I'm like, huh. And my first instinct is like, when this guy has a pause from touring these kids, I need to kind of introduce myself to him. So sure enough, there was a pause. And I kind of, you know, took a deep breath, kind of moved in and said, hello, my name's Andrew Abrams. I'm looking for a job in sports. Do you have any recommendation? And he introduced himself back. He says, hello, my name's Johnny Greco. As everyone, you know, a lot of people in the industry knows who Johnny Greco is. So I remember talking to him about kind of where we're from and video production. And I had made these sort of makeshift business cards. So I handed him a business card. He handed me a business card. And then later that night, I went to the game and I went back home, and that was kind of it. And I stayed in touch with Johnny over the years, little by little. So soon after this run-in with him, there was a job opening for basically the first company to give me a chance was the Manchester Monarchs. So the Manchester Monarchs, they were an AHL team. They've since folded, but before they folded, they switched places with their ECHL team, the Ontario Reign, who's still very much in the AHL. So they gave me the job. So my first job in sports was with a minor league hockey team. Did that for 1 year. And then that year we made it to the semifinals of the Calder Cup. And unfortunately we lost to the Hershey Bears, but our president at the time of the Monarchs was at one of those games. And he said, man, Andrew, I really like how Hershey does their game presentation. So they said, for the final, can you go out there and meet the guys and see if you can, you know, bring back some notes. So I was like, yeah, heck yeah. So drove out to Hershey, PA. For timeline's sake, a week before this, the St. Louis Blues had a job opening for a video editor / video director. So I'd thrown off a resume, and here I am a week later in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And a lot of you guys know Aaron Henry Hank, who's been in the industry for a long time. So came to Hershey, met Hank, learned all I could learn. And then during the evening, went back to my hotel room, got my suit on. And while I was there, Hank kind of mentioned in a roundabout way that there was an old member of their video production crew that was going to be kind of making an appearance that night. And his name's Lamont Buford, and he works for the St. Louis Blues. And mind you, I had literally applied for the St. Louis Blues a week before. So in my head, I'm like, oh man, I didn't know what level Lamont was, but same kind of thing. I took a deep breath and I said, I need to sort of, if I can, I need to meet this guy because, you know, who knows what that connection could bring. So sure enough, that night I walk in the control room and Lamont just happened to be there, and I introduced myself, and I didn't want to be rude to Hank and my hosts there at Hershey. So I remember when Lamont kind of walked outside, I kind of grabbed him and said, hey, by the way, you know, I applied for this St. Louis Blues job. If you can give me any insight, let me know. And, you know, we talked for a little bit and same thing, exchanged numbers. And he went on his way. I went on my way. I went on to watch the game and then went back to Manchester. So about a week later, I get a random phone call at my desk in Manchester, and it's actually Lamont. And he said, hey, man, I looked into it, and the Blues never got your resume or cover letter. And I was like, oh man, like that sucks. So he said, I'll tell you what, I'm going to send you an email, send your resume and cover letter to me, and I'll pass it on to the right people. And that's what I did. And, about, I guess a week or two later, I got a call from, the then VP of entertainment for St. Louis. And, they told me I was part of the interview process. So I did the full interview process, did a demo edit, all that stuff. And fast forward, they offered me the job. So that was amazing. So then I jumped in the NHL. I was with the Blues for 5 years. During that time, even the time when I was applying for Manchester, I would hit up Johnny Greco and I don't remember the frequency, maybe once every 3 months, just to kind of check in. And when I was doing these demos for Manchester and I was doing these demos for St. Louis, I would always kind of pass it over to Johnny, like, hey, can you give me some notes? So we just kind of built this sort of relationship over email. So did 5 years with St. Louis. And during that time, Johnny Greco had transitioned from the Cleveland Cavaliers to WWE wrestling. So 5 years later, I remember him calling me and says, hey, by the way, do you happen to know TriCaster? And I was like, yeah, I used TriCaster in this sort of side gig I did. And he was telling me that WWE puts on these smaller non-televised house shows and they use TriCaster and they're looking for some technicians to sort of grow that brand. And so I was like, oh, I'll try it. So I went on the road one weekend with WWE and I was like, where do I sign? Like, I got to do this. So jumped out of St. Louis, jumped onto the WWE, did that for 2 years, traveled all over the country, some parts of the world. It was amazing. Worked with Johnny a lot during that time. And then I remember it was probably February of 2017, I want to say. And I remember we were on a show and Johnny was actually producing the show. And I remember him kind of waving me over kind of and took me outside and he goes, hey, just so you know, I might be sort of getting out of here. I have this opportunity. There's a new hockey team coming to Vegas. And Kerry Buchholz, who is our president now, had worked with Johnny in Cleveland. They had hired Kerry as the president here, the Golden Knights. And Johnny was being considered for the VP of entertainment. And he said, if I get this job, what would you consider coming back into hockey and helping me sort of develop the video production program? At the time I was like, nah, I'm good. Like, I don't really want to, I've done the hockey thing. But then I thought about it. I'm like, man, what a great opportunity. I'd been to Vegas a number of times and it seemed like a really cool place. So long story short, Johnny got the job in, I believe, April of 2017. I did an interview process. They hired me in May of 2017. And I've been there ever since. So about 6 months before the season started here. And now, ironically enough, Lamont and Johnny are together in the two guys I worked with are together in Seattle. So that's the very long-winded story of sort of being in the right place, the right time, meeting really good-hearted people, and those good-hearted people really sticking their neck out for someone they really didn't know. And I think that says a lot about those guys. It says a lot about the people in the industry where everybody's trying to help people succeed. And I'm sort of proof of that. And we started our fifth season here in Vegas, and having a great time. So that's the long story of the from A to Z.
Before all that happened, though, you had to commit to make the 3-hour trek to Cleveland. And I think some people might not have been willing to do that, thinking that, well, I don't have money. I don't have any income. So you do have to start first. I think that, like, and then find your opportunities as they come, which I think is really cool for the background of that story.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely. The drive was always there. I didn't know. It's not one of the things where I had to force myself for the drive, but I just always knew, like, I want to do video and I'm not going to let anything stop me from doing video. And happened to land in hockey, but really my career could have gone, basically the first job would have sort of dictated my career path, but I'm really happy hockey and sports was that career path.
So you get to Vegas with Johnny and you're building this new hockey team and this new hockey brand in a brand new arena, brand new show in a city that's known for its elaborate shows, right? And I think it's safe to say that you guys have the most elaborate, one of, if not the most elaborate shows in the NHL. What was that mindset coming in and what was your mentality, going into that first season, that first show and helping build that brand and build that massive show?
Yeah, it's when we got here, it was, you know, me and Johnny, and we had to hit the ground running. We had to figure a lot of things out. We had to hire people. But the directive from our owner and from our president at the time, and still the same directive, is make the show a Vegas show. You know, don't worry about what other teams in the league are doing. Worry about what other shows in the Strip are doing. And if people come to Vegas and they have, you know, a budget, or they have a specific amount of money they want to spend, how do we make our show that they want to spend money and come see our show? When you have your Cirques, you have, you know, world-class entertainment up and down the Strip. How do we make our event one that somebody wants to come to? And so that was the directive from the beginning. And then, you know, really, I don't want to say the easiest, but the no-brainer was, let's build off the brand. Let's build off the night, the medieval, you know, start building a backstory on that. And, you know, and then have a crazy idea. And we had a lot of crazy ideas. And the thing was, because our president, because our owner was behind it, there wasn't a lot of pushback. You know, it's, I think a testament of that is our playoff run in year one, when we cut the Winnipeg Jet in half. Well, that was a group of people in a room saying, hey, you know, it'd be hilarious if we cut a jet in half. And everyone kind of laughed. And then the room kind of went silent. And then someone was like, well, what if we cut a jet in half? And then we brought the idea to the president and the owner, and they said, yeah, let's do that. So the creativity that we were allowed to have sort of unthrottled really helped kind of the show what it is. And even to this day, we come up with some crazy stuff. And if we, you know, if we can pitch it in the right way and make everybody understand kind of the end game, we normally get very little pushback on some of these things. So that's sort of the background on how the Vegas Golden Knights show came to be.
I think a lot of times when people think of experiences like that, things that I've seen you post with the intros and some of those really cool graphical elements that you include for your open or what have you, they think it comes with a really high budget. I'm just curious if you feel like the some of the stuff that you've done, you've been able to pull off even without that huge budget. And if that's the case, how do you go about that approach?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we pride ourselves on, we do a lot of our stuff in-house. Almost, we do basically everything. All of the year one stuff, you know, the opens, the playoff opens, that was all done in-house. And it wasn't one of those things where, you know, we were saying, oh, we can't do that, it's too expensive. It was just one of those things where the group, as a collective, were like, we think we can do this, you know? So a lot of the animations you see, a lot of that type of stuff, the only budget associated is, you know, man hours, right? Or salaries. But then there's things, you know, we have some show things like when your lighting packages, your lasers, when you get into that kind of stuff, there's obviously money that's associated with that. But we pride ourselves on a lot of in-house stuff. It's kind of, like I said, it's we have a lot of great people. We've had some transitions from year one to now, obviously that happens. But the mindset has always been the same, where it's like, let's take a stab at it. Let's see what we can do. And I think our work sort of speaks to the really talented people we have and the drive that everybody has to make a final product that makes the fans scream and people ooh and ah. So
you guys have always been on the forefront from a technology side in the league. You guys just opened up a new practice facility, is that correct? And a new studio in there. Why don't you walk us through that and what's new on the tech side in that building? I read the SVG article, but for our listeners who haven't, kind of walk us through that, what's in there and what you're doing with that space.
Yeah, so currently our offices are in City National Arena. If you want the sort of a startup story, when we first started, we were in another building down the road that our owner owned. And Johnny and I, when we first got there, we shared a cube because they didn't know how big they were going to get. So we shared a cube. Then eventually we had about 10 people in an office. So an office that was normally made for like one executive, we crammed 10 people in there. And then that was in from May to August. And then in August of 2017, they built where we are now, City National Arena. They built it as a practice facility, office space. They built it as everything, but there was no plan at the time to build a studio in there. It was mainly two sheets of ice. You could have your team practice here. You could sell ice to leagues, have a front office here, and that's kind of it. So our regional sports network is AT&T Sportsnet. They're out of Colorado. And for the first couple years, when the team went on the road, they do a desk show. They do intermission, pregame and postgame on a desk show. And first 2 years, that desk show was in Colorado. So every time the team went on the road, our broadcasters would go on the road, and then our analysts and our desk people would go to Colorado. And that started becoming sort of, I could imagine, the budget for flying guys back and forth to Colorado. And I could imagine sort of the how tiring it is to do that. So in about 2020, actually, before the pandemic, it was decided that, maybe we should have a studio here on premises, and it could do two things. It would satisfy the AT&T Sportsnet desk, and then we could piggyback off that, because at that time too, social media, Facebook Lives were getting really popular, and live streaming. So the thought was to also build a streaming studio all in one. So we can have our broadcast, we can have our streams, and everybody's happy. So they sought out a party room. So we have these two duplicate party rooms. They took over a party room, working with AT&T Sportsnet, with their designer. They designed it. We actually worked with Alpha Video on the integration, and we told them everything we wanted. AT&T told them everything they wanted, and they built it. And it's to this day, it's incredible. It's a lot of great technology in there. In the Sports Video Group article that I did, I mentioned that COVID was terrible for mankind, but it was really good for technology, because these companies started developing, Zoom came very popular, Teams, then these technologies that incorporated Zoom and Teams, because you couldn't necessarily have two people next to each other in a room. So all this stuff, TriCaster, NewTek with their NDI technology. Well, this building was not designed as a broadcast. So there's no video fiber. There's no SMPTE plugins anywhere. So, but what it has networks everywhere. So NDI became really important to us, because now any network port in this entire building can be a live video feed. So we relied heavily on that. And now we do, since then, they've integrated radio broadcast in there. So now we do a weekly, it's called Nighttime at Noon. It's on Mondays at noon Pacific. And we live stream that. So our live stream capabilities are getting way better. And we're still having our pre, post, and intermission shows out of there. And it's a great space, and we're really happy to do it, to use it and have it. And we're working on some more scheduling in there, so we can have some more sellable assets for sponsorship.
I was going to pivot a little bit and talk about the fan base in Las Vegas. You were the first pro sports team in Vegas. Now there are two, but what was that initial fan base, and what was that initial interaction with that fan base, and what did it take to understand? Every fan base is different. Long story short, the fans I had at the Kansas City Chiefs and inciting those fans versus the fans at Notre Dame were a completely different subset. What did you learn about the fans in Las Vegas during that first season? And what has changed from how you prompt them, how you incite them, how you interact with them from then until now?
Yeah. So if you've ever been to Vegas, Vegas is known for a party town and as tourists. So really the assumption coming in was, oh, we're just going to have a lot of tourists and they're going to come to our game. And the turnover is going to be, new people every time. And the first thing we realized really quick is the locals come out and they still come out. I mean, there's, having never lived in Vegas, having come a few times, you assume, Vegas is just the hotels and the strip and that's it. But when you move here and you live here and you ingrain yourself in the community, you realize that it is a community. There's millions of people that live here, and they don't all work in casinos and they don't all work on the strip. And that was the first big thing was, oh man, like we have locals here and they are really grasping onto this team. The other thing we, you know, like I said, based on assumption, Johnny and I and all the other people that were here, a lot of people worked in sports before. So the assumption of oh, Vegas, you know, fans probably aren't going to know hockey that well. So when there's an icing, let's put an icing graphic up. When there's an offside, put an offside, and, you know, really, really teach them hockey, but not in a way where it's degrading, just sort of, you know, give them a little push. And then we realized very quickly, and even now, there's hockey knowledge here, you know, people understand. So, but really the Vegas vibe of having a great time, that's was there for day one. And that's never changed. I mean, I really believe, I know every team says that they have the loudest building, but I never been in a louder building than ours. And our fans just come out and they don't, you know, I remember in the past, sometimes you got to be careful about how many McNoises you do because, you know, fans can get tired, but our fans, they have the energy. They keep it going from puck drop to the final horn. And they're there to have fun. And yeah, there's tourists that get sprinkled in there, but they're just as loud and it all adds to the atmosphere. And, you know, our DJ does a great job keeping the music and the energy up, and our VP, Tyler Kofer, who was our show caller, does a great job keeping the energy up. And it's just the fans get it and they're there for a good time. And it's one of those things too, that we pride ourselves on, where sometimes we'll meet opposing team fans after the games. And, you know, even if their team lost, there's a smile on their face. Or even if our team loses, there's smiles on people's faces because the experience they got at the game sometimes and outweighs the score, you know? And that's what we know we've done our job, when people can have a good time regardless of the score. So it's been a really great experience, and our fan base is growing, but yeah, they keep that energy going, man, night after night, even a Monday night, it's loud in there.
Thank you. I think you hit on a key point there. I think anything that has long season sports, long home schedule, right? The game entertainment plays such a crucial role of, you know, fans enjoyment after they leave the game, right? Did they have a positive experience, whether they win or lose? A little bit harder to do that in the NFL and college football and things like that, when every game is so tight and so meaningful. But when you get into these long seasons, you really have to vary up that entertainment. You have to extend it. You have to make sure you're engaging your fans in a positive way every single night, regardless of the outcome. I think that's a great point. I want to talk a little bit about, you worked with WWE for a little while, and Johnny did as well. And I've talked to Johnny about this before, but I want your thoughts on, I think what WWE does very well is they put on a spectacle, right? Like it's a spectacle, and it's really large storytelling, right? How many of those elements did you learn in WWE, and how many of that translated over into your sports world and your sports production?
Yeah, WWE, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Storytelling is, that's everything there. And, you know, when I was in St. Louis, I learned how to cut, you know, highlights to music, but never really put two and two together that there's a story in every video you cut. Even if it's a highlight video, you guys know, like it's a highlight video. All a highlight video is clips of athletes doing movements, and that's it. But if you can put a story behind that, that's everything. But yeah, WWE storytelling is everything. It really, you know, especially for the Golden Knights, when we do our opens with a bad guy and a good guy, and the Golden Knight comes out and there's a bad guy. I mean, that's WWE 101. And it really helped develop sort of, what does the bad guy do, you know, and what does the hero do? A bad guy does things like he'll run up and try to hit somebody with their back turn. You know what I mean? And the hero will do heroic things where he'll, you know, stop the bad guy. And there's different characteristics, to that too. You know, a hero would never sort of hit somebody when their back's turned and that kind of stuff. So it's really helped with the storytelling of the opens you see. And it really, WWE really put the why, you know, asked the question, it made you ask the question, why, right? why is this happening? What is this person thinking? Why would they do that? Why wouldn't they do that? And that's really been the backbone for a lot of the stuff we do. And then we you know, there's a few things here and there that we took from WWE just because they're cool. We have a moment every now and then our opens where we have a character called the Lantern Guy, and the Lantern Guy lifts the lantern, and that's normally what he calls the Golden Knight. Well, there's this big spotlight that we shoot the Lantern Guy from behind. That's sort of a WWE entrance thing. You know, shoot a big spotlight and make a grand entrance. And WWE also in the show world, you know, some of the superstars, you know, have blackout entrances where the lights go out. And, you know, why is that a thing? And how does that add to the effect of their character? And really, you know, take WWE at its core too. It's, you know, the way they choreograph, it's just a story and a story of why different people would do that. Why is a guy, you know, cutting a promo, that's the term for when they are on the mic. Why are they cutting a promo in the ring? And if they're a bad guy, what are they going to say to make the crowd boo? And that boo moment, it makes the hero yay moment so much more powerful when you can do that. So yeah, a lot of just little small details that we learned from WWE that definitely flowed over to our show here.
I just enjoy listening to all this, like hearing like where all these things come from and how you think about it, because I think a lot of times you get to a point where it's like, well, I'm just gonna make this video and just put this person here, this person, and then you go, well, why? And trying to approach it from the backstory and understanding how everything works together makes it super powerful. So I guess when you're looking at inspiration, just in general, inspiration, whether that's other shows on the Vegas Strip, how do you take and approach your inspiration and apply it to what you're doing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I can say that our team here, we have a big team of really creative people, and a lot of them are super cinephiles and they love movies. And a lot of the inspiration that comes from when we do our opens are from movies. You know, we have a couple guys, or we have a few people that are very big Star Wars fans. So we make references to like, what would a Darth Vader do? What would a Palpatine do? Like, you know, what would a Luke Skywalker do? And we really, Tyler Ferraro, who's one of our entertainment guys here, he actually has sort of backstories for all of our characters. That way we can sort of reference like, the Golden Knight wouldn't do that because this, or the bad guy would do that or hasn't done that. Or sometimes we don't do this a lot because we understand that a lot of people, or sometimes there's people at our games, it's their first game. Sometimes we'll do like Easter eggs from open to open in the past, and only very few people get it, but we kind of get a kick out of it. But, you know, like I said, that we have that lantern character, bringing characters back in different ways, but doing it in a way where a person who's never been there before doesn't have to be like, well, who's that? Right. Or we give our bad guy a flag to come out with, because it's a very obvious thing. That's like, okay, this is the bad guy because he's holding the opposing team flag. And this is a good guy because he's a Golden Knight. But yeah, movies, TVs, we all watch a lot of movies and TVs shows. One of the things, and the other thing, you know, you can go for the obvious. I didn't watch Game of Thrones for 3 years after I worked here because I didn't know what really the story's about, and I didn't want that to sort of jade or sort of interfere with fresh ideas. But I ended up watching it and it was great. And then it was like, oh, you pull some inspiration from that. But yeah, we as a team, we just have a lot of really talented people come up with a lot of good ideas. And I'd say, you know, WWE started the movement between Johnny and I, and then it continues through the medium of film, television, even shows. Yeah. There's been times we've gone to sort of a Cirque show or seen a show on the Strip where you're like, that would be awesome. Or even concerts. I remember being to some concerts and how they do some, you know, the videos in the background or some sort of element where you can be like, maybe there's a way we can sort of incorporate that in our show. So really, our eyes and ears are always open for just ideas, no matter where they come from. There's sort of a mantra that gets repeated around our group is ideas can come from anywhere or anyone. So we just keep our eyes and our ears open. And when we see something we like, we sort of can transition to how could we do that in Arena? And, you know, would that work for our fans?
I love that you're almost building like your own like Vegas Golden Knights cinematic universe in your opens. I love that, even if it's just for you sometimes. I think that's good. I think that's good storytelling, right? Because you're making things fit, but you're also keeping in mind the fan who doesn't know and hasn't been there, you know, and you have to do those things to keep them up to date. I think those are good exercises to keep your storytelling sharp, you know, and keep your creative mind going. You've talked a couple of times about your team and how creative they are. Talk a little bit about what it was like building that team and the type of backgrounds you looked for when you guys were just starting and putting together this group.
Yeah, when Johnny and I were here, it was a lot of just, you know, my main, before I even touched, you know, I was brought on to start the video department, but I also edited myself and shot and that kind of stuff. And before I even touched a computer or touched a camera, I was just going through emails with Johnny, trying to find, you know, a lot of people hit us up and trying to sort through emails and make sense of it. And then we sat down and thought, okay, what jobs, you know, what positions do we need to hire? And then we wrote up job descriptions for those. And then we just put them out there, and we didn't necessarily have a criteria as far as, we weren't specifically looking for people that worked in sports. We were just like, let's open the floodgates and see what we got. And obviously with a new team like that, the floodgates were open, went through a lot of resumes. And we ended up getting a bunch of people that had sports backgrounds. And we actually had some people that did not have sports backgrounds. And I think that combination sort of gives you a fresh look, because it's not, you know, it's not Johnny bringing things from Cleveland and me bringing things from St. Louis and everybody else. It's sort of like, you know, there's some things that will work that we can bring, but how about this person that's never been in sports? What's their perspective? What can they bring to the table? And I think that's one of the things that was so unique, is because we weren't sort of pigeonholing people into this model. It was, let's find good people, let's find talented people, and the rest will sort of write itself. And even today, like I said before, since then, you know, year five, some people have left, some people have come, and in the new people, we still kind of do the same thing. Are they a good person? Are they going to be a good teammate to the group? What can they bring to the table skill wise? So it's, I think that opened up a lot of what you see, is just different people from different backgrounds coming together. Year one, the players were known as the Golden Misfits, because they were like a band of a group of random people that came together and did, you know, and that season did great things. And I think our team sort of reflected that too. We were misfits. We were different people from different backgrounds, and we came together and we made what everybody saw. So I think that was really cool. And yeah, that's kind of the backstory there.
Can you talk a little bit about the makeup of your team too? Earlier we talked about you do most things in-house. Just curious, it sounds like you own the building and you're running the in-game. Do you also create content that goes on digital social? Because you had mentioned streaming. Can you touch on a little bit of what you execute against and then what the makeup of the team looks like?
Yeah, for sure. So we are part of a team called Entertainment Experience and Production. So you have your entertainment experience side, which is, that's your entertainment people. And then you have your production side, which is your video people, and together. And there's some technology in there too. So so as a whole, our group is responsible for the in-game entertainment for the Vegas Golden Knights. In the entertainment experience realm, we have our VP of entertainment experience, who oversees everybody. Then we have a cast director. So we call our group of entertainers cast, because very Vegas. So cast is your dance team, your ice team, your showgirl team, your drummers, all the, you know, the mascot, the Golden Knight character. That's the cast. So we have a cast director, we have an entertainment coordinator, and together that's the show side of things. And then production side, we have three shooter/editors, and then we have two motion graphic people. And then on the technology side, we have a crewer that crews the room, and she also does make sure the sponsor LED content is correct. And then we have a technology guy, that kind of make sure all the tech is working. And then our video director actually has his foot in both areas. He both directs, so he's in charge of the technical side, and he edits videos for in Arena. We also do our social videos. And then we also recently acquired a AHL, American Hockey League team, the Henderson Silver Knights. They have sort of their own entertainment and video makeup, the people that do that, but we also help a little bit there. And starting next summer, we have an indoor football team. That's IFL team, the Henderson Nighthawks, that are going to be starting. And again, some of our group will be helping with that. Entertainment side will be sort of helping develop it. And then our graphic people will be doing all the in-arena graphics for that. If I miss anybody, I think that's everybody. But it's really cool. It's a great group of people. Our team definitely has grown since year one, or I guess grown and sort of changed how we, you sort of adapt to the needs when you're, when you have a team. So, but great group of people, very talented, great ideas. And anything you see in game and on our website or our social medias are this group of people creates.
We've gotten a lot of questions, both from panelists and from other people within the industry, about ideation and how you come up with some of these concepts. And you've kind of talked a little bit about where you're pulling inspiration from and some of those different kinds of things. Where do you start, I guess, when it comes to ideation, and what does that process look like for you guys?
Yeah, so the ideation process for us is our entire group. So the 10 people I sort of were talking about previously, we all come in the room, and actually the room I'm in right now, this is sort of our studio space, and it also doubles as our equipment room and a media space or a meeting space. So they come in here, and we really legitimately hash it out. So we say, okay, we have an open for the season. What do we want to do? And there's some elements that we've developed over the years. Obviously, it's always going to have Artie Golden Knight character. It's always going to have some sort of villain character. And then what we've developed over the years is it's going to be unique to every team. Whether that's a logo change in the video, whether it be, it's going to be unique to every team. And then there's normally always a video portion that explains the live portion and then the live portion itself. So it's simple as that. We just get in a room and we just start throwing out ideas and a lot of what ifs. If you have a lot of what ifs being thrown around, that's a great ideation session. And we'll take, an hour or two one day, and we'll see where we can go and if we need to have some more time. But legitimately, it's just a lot of people throwing out ideas. We write it on a whiteboard, and then we kind of just sort of connect the dots that makes the most sense for what we're trying to accomplish.
Andrew, you've talked a lot about the makeup of your team and how you go about thinking about the work and executing against the work, the storytelling. And that didn't all come up front, right? And you've mentioned, your time with other people around the industry. If you're talking to people who are entering the industry and, early on when you were talking about taking a year and a half to find a full-time job, I think a lot of people are looking in this pandemic and are struggling to find jobs and maybe getting, disappointed about it. How would you approach giving them feedback or advice on looking forward to what they can do in the sports industry?
Yeah, I would say just for starters, networking, meeting people is everything. You know, if my story is, if the theme of my story is anything to anybody, it's don't be afraid to meet people, because you never know who you're going to meet. You never know who they are. You never know who they know. So really, networking is huge. If you guys, these people ever have an opportunity to go to networking sessions, or if you're lucky enough to go to the IDEA conference, I mean, that's the overload of networking. Really just meeting as many people. LinkedIn is a great resource. LinkedIn, I never really saw the value of LinkedIn until my career started. And that's just, you're literally just being, you're on a site that you can meet anybody and become their connection. And if you have questions, you can ask them. I get hit up occasionally on people that just want to do sort of informational phone calls, and I love doing that. It's just, I would say networking is how this industry works. I would say for people that are scared to hear this, the part of my story about saying it took me a year and a half to get hired, I truly believe that was just because everything I had was on a piece of paper, on a resume and a demo reel. And that's what hundreds of other people, thousands of other people were doing simultaneously. So there was no real way for me to stand out because I was just a name and words on a page. If I would have had the opportunity to network with these people, like I did with Johnny and Lamont, now they have a face with a name. And you know, if you can stand out that way, that's huge because, you know, there's a lot of jobs out there, a lot of jobs. And you just have to find a way to stand out. And the best way to stand out is just to meet as many people as you can. I'm where I am in my career, and I'll still go on LinkedIn and just start meeting people. Cause you never know, you know, who you're going to meet. You never know. Perfect example is like when we have job openings, I will go through and I will friend anybody who says they're a motion graphic artist, anybody who's a video editor, because when you put the, Teamwork Online link out there, that's the best way to see eyes on it, is to show the people you're connected with. So really networking, meet people. You don't have to worry about, putting up a front, be yourself. But I would say getting yourself out there in front of people's eyes is probably the most important thing. And be a good human being is up there. It's funny because I'm having a lot of conversations with Johnny. You know, it's almost like in most cases, and I've said this a lot of times, in most cases, we'll take a young, hungry or a hungry individual with a great attitude that maybe might not have the skill over a seasoned vet with a terrible attitude. You know what I mean? So be a good person, network, and just work on your skills. You know, it's when I was in college, when I was graduating from college or graduating from high school.
We talk about being old on here. So you're in good company.
Yeah. Technology now is so easy to get your hands on. There's so many different cameras out there and they're not necessarily expensive. So easy to get a computer or build a computer and, you know, get an Adobe license or whatever, and just start having fun. Like the job of getting a job shouldn't be the stressful part, right? The having fun, trying things, creating, that way you have some sort of demo reel to show people. That's kind of where it's at. Have fun. Like if you, with any job, I think you guys can vouch for this. If you're not having fun in your job, it's time for another career. You know what I mean? We do this because we love doing this. We do this because we love how to see someone's face light up when they see something that the team produced. Like just knowing that you've touched somebody, whether it's a moment, a boo moment, a heartfelt moment, you know, make someone cry, whatever it is, that connection to the fans, and just being able to sort of admire the beast that you're a part of makes this whole thing worth it, you know? So yeah, just get out there, really just get out there. And LinkedIn, if you're not on LinkedIn and you're new to the industry, get on LinkedIn and just start friending as many people, because I think people are scared of rejection. And I've found that majority of the people you connect with will connect back. People aren't trying to keep the sports industry a secret. They're not trying to keep people out of it. I think if anything, we need people in sports more than ever. So that's kind of my two cents for whatever it's worth to the group.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.